Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback writer.
This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors, and sometimes we showcase best-selling authors. That is the case today, and this is show number 107, and it is January 24th, 2022. I am your host, Tom Riedel, and a brief intro to today's show. We have on Luke Remain, and he's going to talk to us about his writing life and his book, Ash. So now, more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriedel.net. That's thomasriedel.net. In the blog section and on the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at TomRiedel56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we will get back to you. Special note, we can also now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. Upcoming authors on the Writer's Lounge on February 7th, 2022, 2 weeks from tonight, Frederick Reynolds will be on. He's the author of Black, White, and Gray All Over, A Black Man's Odyssey in Life and Law Enforcement. This is a true story of one cop's life, a kid who grew up in the thick of crime and then became a cop and had to deal with it all. This one you don't want to miss. On February 21st, best-selling author Robert Dugani will be here to chat with us about several of his books, including Sam Hell and his newest novel, The World Played Chess. I hope you'll tune in for those exciting upcoming shows. And Writer's Topics, next segment. During this segment, we often touch on the tools of the trade, such as show, don't tell, character building, and even publishing and marketing topics. But tonight we're going to connect the segment to the next segment. And of course, that is to introduce our guest, best-selling author Luke Romain. I found the following clip on YouTube, which was very well done, and is a short 8-minute introduction of Luke, mostly explaining what he does aside from being a writer of best-selling novels. He's a bouncer in nightclubs in Australia. I'm not sure if he still does security work, but we'll ask him about that. This clip you will hear was produced in 2015, and after we listen, we'll be back to talk live to Luke Romain. We'll be back with that chat in about 8 minutes.
I always believed in, an everyday person being able to do great things. I don't want to be a guy that exists. I want to be someone that actually does something of worth. There's very little that I haven't seen. I've dealt with guns, knives, bottles, pool cues. As a bouncer, you don't deal with the nice people. The ones we deal with are the problems. We have to deal with some terrifying people. We've got guys that are actually organized crime. We've got guys that, really like to hurt people. People are very surprised when I come. No one believes me. No one believes, look at me. I'm a goon. It's a great thing when I get people arguing with me. And the most common thing people say is, oh, you're just a bouncer. You'll never be anything but a bouncer. And sometimes I let it go and just say, yeah, whatever. But then every now and then I had this one guy one night, an English tourist, and he kept carrying on like that. And I said, I'm a USA Today bestselling author. What? I'm a USA Today bestselling author. 5 minutes beforehand, he wanted to punch my head in. He became my biggest fan.
You've probably never heard of Luke Romain, but 500,000 people worldwide have read his 8 books of self-published fiction. His Twitter account sits just outside the top 10 most followed accounts in Australia, more than any other Australian author, publisher, or publication. In fact, more people follow Luke Romain than the Prime Minister of Australia. And yet, he remains unknown. His success, a surprise to even those who've spent decades with him standing on the doors of nightclubs.
I'm Mark Hammer Dixon. I was Mark Brandon Chopper Reed's bodyguard up until 2012. The Gold Coast in the 90s, well, they were good days. We had some good times. A lot different to what it is today. The bouncers were still bouncers. Back then you could get away with a fair bit. There wasn't so many fake tits around. Like a never-ending bloody summer, really. Mate, when me and Luke were bouncing 20 years ago, you asked someone to leave. Mate, if they didn't leave, we just punched them straight in the mouth.
I used to go home covered in blood every night. I used to get ready for work and just be anxious that, maybe tonight's the night I get bashed.
The first time I met him, we were both standing on a door together. I thought, this bloke works his arms and shoulders too much and doesn't do anything with his legs. That was my first impression of him.
We were just doing horrendous things. I was just bashing people for fun. I thought nothing of it. Back then, being a young guy in a very violent society, I was getting paid to hurt people, to just bash people, and it didn't affect me at all.
I just took it as normal, that what he was drinking. I didn't see it as excessive until I really found out why he was drinking. Luke lost his father early in his life. Mate, he was only young, 15 or something.
My memories of that accident, I woke up to my mother screaming. She said, Dad's dead. Dad's dead. She was screaming, crying, hysterical. Walked straight out the back of the house, walked over to the garage wall and punched it. And just kept punching it until I broke my hand. I was angry before then, but I don't know. I just seemed to fall apart after that. I always ran to alcohol to escape the pain that I felt inside.
But things were about to change.
He loved that music, the Braveheart music, the soundtrack. He had the CD, and you could just hear it playing in his bedroom every night. It would be on repeat. It would just go round and round and round all night long.
I used to listen to that every night. It used to help mellow me out. I'd like to know where you got the Braveheart thing from, because that's interesting. But we'll talk about that later.
Luke met his wife Sarah, moved to Cairns, and never drank again. But he still needed a place to focus his frustration and aggression.
I was thinking, imagine if I could do this. Imagine if I could put these sort of elements into this story. Wow, that'd be great. No, you know, why can't I? And then I thought one day, well, screw it, I'm going to write a book. I started pouring a lot of my anger, my hatred, everything that I felt went into this character. I started writing about an assassin. He was a man that tortured and killed people for a living. And I thought, how can I redeem him? I thought, I'll put him up against the Russian mafia. Why not?
Chapter 1, The Dark Man.
Please don't kill my wife, pleaded Rico San Diablo. I broadly described my books as action thrillers. They do have fantasy elements to them in a modern world. And, yeah, people tend to like it. More people reading my books than live in Cairns.
Despite his success, being an independent author selling e-books is not quite the fantasy world Luke creates in his fiction.
Indie publishing is not a goldmine. It's a lot of hard work for very little. I mean, I've been doing this for over 10 years now. And I'm only just starting to see some sort of financial reward. I do all my own book covers. I do all my own book trailers, editing, marketing. All this stuff takes time. And so basically my whole life at the moment revolves around writing and marketing myself. It's a lonely sort of existence.
But it's not that lonely for the author at work. The man whose appearance can be deceiving has some surprising muses to keep him company.
So how many guinea pigs do you have?
I've got five.
Five guinea pigs?
Yes. This is Coco. Look at me. Do I look like a guinea pig sort of person? I never thought I'd like them. Pinky.
Doesn't really parry with the action adventure writer slash bouncer.
No, you know, they're very ferocious when they want to be. Ow! What's that for?
Like almost all indie authors, Luke has to maintain his night job just to get by while he writes his next book.
You stand and stare at a crowd for 10 hours a night, you become slightly jaded in regards to people. Still do the security on the weekends, as much to get out and about and not lock myself in a cave all day. The new book is something completely different. For the first time, I'm using a female protagonist, which is awkward. Because, you know, I don't know how women think. I'm never disappointed. I'm selling books to people that like to read my words. If I sold one book a year, it'd be worth it. It doesn't matter. I'm not doing it for money. If you're getting into writing it for money, you're an idiot.
He's obviously bloody successful at what he does. You know, 500,000 people have read his books. Jeez. I'd love 500,000 people read my book.
I think everyone has different aspects of their life. No one is set in stone. No one is one thing or another. There's various levels to every single person. You know, the old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover. You know, to look at me and, yeah, okay, he's a bouncer. He's a thug. He's this. He's that. I'm not. No one is what you see. Everyone's got a great story inside of them. It just has to come out.
And that's right. It just has to come out. And now the next segment of our show, of course, this is the guest author segment where we will chat with Luke in just a second. But first, let me tell you about the book, Ash. Here's my partial review of Ash. I have professionally reviewed over 100 books in the last 10 years, and this is the truth. Ash, the main protagonist in this story, is one of the most interesting characters I've ever known on the pages of a book. We learn early on in the story that he's a priest, but he's no ordinary priest. In fact, he's no ordinary human being either. He's a very large and imposing blind man with eyes that will spook you to the core. But the power he has acquired to slip into another dimension called Shade unnerves him more than his eyes and size might frighten others. In the first 20 pages, you'll come to know Ash and to love him for his generous acts of kindness, his sightless bravery, and his protective nature. Ash is addictively intriguing, and he propelled me deeper into this fascinating supernatural thriller. Luke Romaine is no stranger to me. I have had him on the show before, and I have read other works of his. And his writing was good back then, and he has succeeded and evolved into a very successful best-selling author. Ash is the first book of the Shade Trilogy. The character alone will keep you glued to the pages. And now it is my pleasure, and I am very excited to welcome Luke Romaine back to the Writer's Lounge broadcast as we now push the magic button to open the doors to the Writer's Lounge. And here we are from down under, Luke Romaine. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How about you today, Luke?
I'm doing okay. I've got a coffee beside me. I'm trying to wake up. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, so I should be awake by now, but it's still a struggle sometimes.
Are you on a speakerphone?
I am on headphones. Are you having trouble hearing me?
A little bit of like a distant echo. I wonder if maybe you can get closer to the mic.
Oh, it's attached to the headphones, so I can't really do much about that.
Okay, well, we'll go with the way it is. I think it'll be fine. So it's been
Sorry about that.
Not a problem. It's been a long time, my friend. A lot has happened over the course of the last 10 years, both to you and me. But those folks listening who don't know much about you, can you tell us anything more about you that we didn't hear in that clip? And do you still have more Twitter followers than the Prime Minister?
I don't know. I don't pay that much attention to the comparisons between myself and the Australian Prime Minister. That show was filmed a few years ago now. I've given up security completely. I'm writing full-time. And I live up in the hills in far north Queensland, surrounded by wildlife, which is lovely most of the time until the snakes come in the house. And I just write all day. I've got several projects on the go at the moment. I've got three books with my agents at the moment, and I'm just about to start the third book in the series of the Ash series.
Very good. Do you miss security work at all?
I miss the guys that I worked with. You become very close with people that you work with in that sort of environment because you're relying on each other so much to watch each other's backs, and it becomes almost a family. I miss that. The work itself, you know, you're not going to miss that, really. You're dealing with psychopaths a lot of the time, and drunk people. If you've ever had to deal with one drunk person in your life arguing with you, well, I used to deal with 30 a night. So, you're not going to miss that unless you're an idiot.
Right. So you started writing, let's just go back a little ways to your childhood, or not really your childhood when you got interested in writing. It was more probably in your middle years, correct?
No, I loved writing as a child. All through school, I wrote just short stories mainly. And it wasn't something I took seriously. I just did it for fun. I read constantly as a child because back then, as you know, we didn't have so much mindless entertainment like, you know, on your phones and video games and everything like that. TV was just archaic. You had five channels in Australia. So there wasn't that sort of stuff. So I was constantly reading, and it opened my mind to a lot of new worlds. I loved just reading anything I could get my hands on. And then I put it aside in my early years, in my, you know, in my teen years and stuff like that, and it wasn't until my mid-20s, I think, that I just started writing a book called The Dark Path, which took me a long time to write the first draft of that because I had no idea what I was doing. And eventually that got published, and it's been wonderful ever since.
Very good. And how in the world did you come up with this character, Ash?
I don't really know. I like putting characters in difficult situations. And the concept of Ash was, the conflict of being a god in one world, but there's no one else there, or almost a beggar in this world, because he's blind and considered weak in some aspects. So he's got that conflict within him of, you know, he goes to shade, he's virtually immortal, all his wounds heal, and he's got all these powers, but there's no one else there. Everything that goes in there dies. If someone else comes with him into this realm, they turn to ash. So it's just that conflict of his character, and as you read the book, as you know, more of his past comes out, and he's almost a tormented figure that's striving for redemption in many ways.
Right. I think what endeared me to him was the idea that he was blind, but he was he was also very very his characteristics were very humane to others. But his eyes were very, I would think that if I had met him, I would probably have been spooked by him. But I think that was the pull with the character, because he was also a priest that kind of immediately pulled me in to want to know more about him. So I really applaud you on that character. And I really do mean that he was the best character I've ever seen on a page before. I really, really enjoyed that. How many books have you published, and what has that process been like for you, from the editing to the publishing to the marketing?
At this stage, I've published 16 books. It's a slow process, and it's getting slower as I learn more about editing. It takes me longer. I do more edits than I ever used to, because I'm learning more stuff as I go along. I use different services now. I use beta reading services to help me along with the editing, and it all takes time. So whereas before I might have only taken done one edit pass or two edit passes at the most, now I'll do five or six.
Right. Do you use any editing software at all?
I use Grammarly and a program called Pro Writing Aid for various reasons.
I use that also. It works very well for me.
Yeah, I use it for different reasons. Grammarly is a great all-around tool. Pro Writing Aid finds things that Grammarly misses. And, I choose which ones I want to keep and which ones I'll ignore.
Right, right. So then you send it off to the editor after you've done your editing, and then they edit it, correct? Or is it just you?
It depends on the work. I will send it off, and they'll come back mainly with story structure. And plot holes are the big things that we're looking for. The grammatical issues, I find myself with my beta readers and other tools. So that's not an issue most of the time. It's plot holes and story structure. You sometimes need a third set of eyes to just sort of look at a project and go, right, this is what I find lacking, or this is, you know, this is kind of weird, I don't understand it. Because at the end of the day, a reader is going to be looking at this, and what you think makes sense, because the whole story is inside your head, you think it makes sense, but it may not be explained properly.
Right. Right. Do you see any of yourself in Ash, and what would that be?
I see parts of myself in every single character I write.
Okay.
Ash, especially, look, you know, I spent close to 30 years doing various types of security, from bodyguard work to movie sets to nightclub bouncing to Mickey Mouse children's shows, and so you have this. There must be a sort of ingrained protective nature if you want to do that for that long, and Ash has that. Ash wants to help people, especially as his past comes out, and he's done some nasty things in his past. He wants to make up for that, and part of that is why he becomes a priest, but he's also not quite right as a priest. You know, he hasn't had that full calling from God. Yeah, it's one of those things. He's out of place, trying to do the right thing, but not sure how to do it.
You know, Ash is very intimidating, and so are you. You're a pretty good
not
sized guy. You're a pretty good sized guy there, Luke. And I could see, you know, that you might be. Some people may be intimidated by you if they were to meet you in a nightclub or a place where you're doing your security work. I was also wondering from the clip, have you worked on your legs? Are your legs better than the rest of your body?
I'm doing different sorts of exercising now, and yes, we're working. I'm working on my legs. Thank you very much for asking that question.
Uh-huh. In creating your characters in the worlds they live in, how do you keep track of all the personalities and the mapping of those other worlds? Do you use outlines or notes for doing that?
I don't use outlines. The last few books I've started using Scrivener, which is a writing program I'm sure you're aware of.
Okay.
Scrivener is great for doing character profiles. So that's one of the things I really like about it. It's tools I won't get into on here. But the character profiles are really important because I've got a horrible memory and I will forget everything about a character, especially in a series, that I have to go back and sort of go, okay, what does this person look like? And, you know, what were they wearing at this time? And you just for continuity side of things, it helps with that. That's the main thing I use that for.
Yeah, what is the Ash series completed?
No, I'm just about to do the third book in the Ash series. Two books are published
right
at the moment. The first book is actually on sale this month for 99 cents on Kindle, or the equivalent of 99 cents wherever you are in the world. And the third book, I think I have about half of it written. I started writing it and then got sidetracked with other books, which I tend to do. I tend to get a calling for another book and I put a project aside and then jump onto this other book. And so in this case, I've jumped onto three different books. And so I've got a couple of series that I have to tie off before I start anything new. So, and the Ash series is going to be the first one that I tie off. That'll be hopefully finished and published soon.
Right. What is your day like? When is the best time of day for you to do your writing? I know you have a lot of critters running around your place because I've seen them on Facebook. How does that work for you as far as your writing? What's best time of day for you?
I every day for me is very much set up into. I get up and feed my dogs and then come into my office, and I will work in my office for 8 or 9 hours straight. Not just doing writing, there's other things that I have to do. I do some graphic design work for people. I do book designs and stuff, book cover designs, and I also do marketing for some people as a side job. But I will jump between jobs in the office for 8 or 9 hours a day. And that's pretty much it. There's no huge structure to it. I will do what needs to be done. Like, for instance, at the moment, I've got a book that I'm about to send off to my agents called Arrowdale, and that is in the final read-through stage of that. So I'll, read 20 to 30 pages in a go, and then jump over and do a bit of graphic design for some stuff I have lined up, and then do some marketing for myself or someone else if I'm contracted out for that. It's a lot of stuff on the go all the time, and you've got to be self-motivated and know what you're doing.
Tell us about those toilet frogs.
The toilet frogs. I left my toilet window open one night, and the next day I had a frog living in the toilet, and a green tree frog. So
in the bowl or in the tank?
No, in the tank. And so I just left it there. We get a few snakes where I live. Nothing bad for us, but there are a lot of pythons that'll eat the frogs. I thought, okay, he's safe. Ended up, as months went by, I ended up with 4 frogs in the tank. And I didn't mind it, but unfortunately because they're obviously going to the toilet inside the toilet tank, the urine or whatever the byproduct is ate through the seals, all the rubber seals, and I had to replace everything. So the frogs got rehomed. They're now in pot plants and various places around my house.
Well, at the beginning of this interview, I failed to mention that if you're out there listening live to the show here, you could call in and talk to Luke, area code 914-219-0868. We'd appreciate the phone call, and don't be shy. We don't bite. At least I don't, and I don't think Luke does either. Let me see here what I was gonna ask you next here. What is the one book, and I know you've written several, if you had to pick, that would be your favorite one to write?
Anything with a character called Wes. So there was a series I wrote very early on. Called the Prometheus Wars series, which is 2 books, Beyond Hades and Slaves of Valhalla. And a character in that, his name is just Wes, W-E-S. And he's pretty much insane. He's based on certain people that I've worked with in nightclubs over the years who are, there was one gentleman in particular who I won't name, but he was an ex-SAS soldier, and just absolutely bonkers. He was scared of nothing, cared nothing about what people thought of him or what he said, and he was hilarious. So Wes is based on him, and he's an ex-SAS soldier, and he ends up teaming up with an archaeologist who has to close off portals that are opening up and around the world and unleashing creatures from Greek mythology into our world, and our weaponry can't fight them, can't defeat them. So Wes is just a light-hearted, fun character who just does whatever the hell he wants. I've just finished writing a standalone book, which may be a lead on to a new series of books with Wes in a different scenario, completely different scenario, but yeah, the same guy. And I absolutely love it. It makes writing easy. Don't have to
wow.
think too hard, because it's all the things I want to say and do, he does them.
That's like magic happening. I'm assured that when you sit down to write and that comes into your head, that you get that easy flow going and everything just comes out of you. I love when that happens. In Ash, you write about religion. Do you ever think about putting out a book that the content might not be what your loyal readers would like to read about, such as maybe writing stories about religion and any other controversial subject matters? Is there ever a hesitancy there to do something that you want to do but afraid that your readers might not like it?
That's an interesting question. I've written an entire series, which was pretty much what you're saying. It was called The Legacy Chronicles, and it basically outlined a young man being told that he was Christ reincarnated, and he had to save humanity from the end of the biblical end of the world. And that was a four-book series linking on to my first ever book called The Dark Path, which had religious undertones as well. There are people who are upset by it, but like everything, you're not going to please everyone. You can't write dictated on what you think people might like. You write the stories that are in your heart. And look, you know, you've got to be careful, obviously. You don't write stupid stuff, but if it's fiction, it's fiction. If people can't differentiate between fiction and religion, then that's on them. It's not on you as a writer. Your job is not to please everyone. Your job is to write exciting, interesting, fun stories that people enjoy. And I think more people enjoy my books than hate them. So that's a good thing.
Right. In your clip, you had mentioned about writing, and you're not writing to make money. Are you still believing along the same paths since now that you're writing full-time?
100%. 100%. I make more money than I spend now. But, yeah, it's a hard road. If you go into it to make money, then you're going into it for the wrong reasons, and you'll burn out far too soon. You've got to love what you're doing. You have to absolutely love writing in its purest form. You just need to enjoy telling stories to people who you'll never meet. And if you want to make money from it, ultimately I think you can make money from it, but you have to put in the hard work. And I mean, like, you're looking at a minimum of 10 years of nothing before you see any sort of profit or any sort of reward from it. There's an author who everyone should know, but probably some people don't. His name is Brandon Sanderson. He's a very famous fantasy author who for 10 years wrote 12 books in 10 years, got none of them published. Not a single publisher would look at him. And now he wrote several of the books in the Wheel of Time series. He's an executive producer on the Wheel of Time series. He's probably one of the biggest fantasy, if not the biggest fantasy authors in the world at the moment. But he says, for 10 years, he got nothing. You're pushing a Sisyphus stone up a hill, getting no reward. And that's what you're looking at, unfortunately, when you're getting into writing. So if you don't love what you're doing, you're in for a hard slog.
Right. Unless you hit that magical book that some people do, first-time author, it takes off. But for the majority of writers out there, we struggle to make a lot of money. And like you say, if you're not in it for just the love of writing, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. I agree. I know you have strong opinions about book covers, and you also design your own covers, as you alluded to. What's that like for you? Is that, as you mentioned, in your office during the day, you're working also on covers along with writing?
Yeah. I've been fortunate enough that people occasionally pay me to do cover art for them. It's, once again, another thing I really enjoy. It's an artistic outlet for me. I find that very mindless almost in its own way compared to writing. Writing is such a technical way of doing something, whereas graphic design, once you know what you're doing, it's fiddling around with things until they look good, and then you go, oh, wow, that's fantastic. It's a much simpler reward system than writing a book.
So you would judge a book by its cover?
I think that the reality of it is that in this day and age, books are judged by their covers on things like Amazon and stuff like that. And there is such a glut of books in the market that your first impression is going to be the book cover. So people need to, like, you can have the best book in the world. If it's not noticeable online, it's not going to get picked up by anyone. So, but in saying that, you do not judge the book contents by its cover. You can have a lovely looking cover, and there's a lot of books out there at the moment that have got fantastic covers because there's a lot of cover designers out there with a lot of talent. But then you open it and start reading it, it's horrible.
Social media, you're out there. I enjoy your tweets and your Facebook posts. What's your advice to new authors in regards to the rules to follow or not to follow on social media?
I don't know if there are any rules on social media, but obviously don't be an idiot. try to keep your political opinions to yourself. If you're trying to promote yourself as an author and you're out there vocally espousing opinions about American politics or anything like that, or any sort of politics, you're gonna upset people, and that's silly. That's not what you're there for. You're not there to try and sway people's opinions about anything, religion, politics, anything like that. You're there to gain attention from a following in a crowded room of people shouting, you need to be noticed. So, be friendly with people. Get out there and, chat with people. Get out there and I have a rule now, after finding out the hard way, that I have a rule now that I will only post things that might make people's lives slightly better. Now, whether that's humor, anything like that. I love posting memes and fun stuff that may give people a smile, because if you're posting anything else that's like of your opinions, then it's just silly. You're not making the world a better place. It's social media.
Right.
Don't take it too seriously.
Right, and I think it's a break from all that stuff we read too out there constantly with the politics. It's nice to you know, take a break from that and go look at bathroom frogs for a little bit, which I enjoy.
That's exactly right. And right. Who doesn't want to see some toilet frogs?
That's right.
But another note is don't try and blast people with your book promotions or any sort of promotion for that regard.
Right.
If you're just shouting in people's faces, this is my book, read it now, this is my book, read it now, then they're automatically just going to ignore you and move on to the next person.
Yeah. We've gotten wise over the years.
Pardon?
I said we've gotten wise over the years, some of us have, in regards to social media and what to do and what not to do there to make lives a little bit easier and a little bit more fun, like you say. Has anyone approached you about a movie deal?
I have a couple of agents and a manager who are looking into stuff like that for me. Unfortunately, as you know, as everyone knows, the last 2 years have been horrible for Hollywood, and anything along those lines. Producers have not been looking at anything that will not guarantee a paycheck. So as a mid-list author like myself, getting a big deal or any sort of movie deal is a struggle, even with the best agents in the world. So hopefully now that COVID is slowing down slightly and the economy is picking up, I hope, I believe, I don't pay too much attention to it. Things are looking better, and you know there's more opportunities on the horizon. So we're looking at different things now. Yeah.
I know that you like to travel, or you did at several points in your life. In the last time we talked, you've gone to Vietnam, and you've also taken a friend of ours along with you in those. I guess the waters, I saw you paddling along in a boat in one of those clips on YouTube that I was looking at. How do you enjoy traveling? Do you ever think about maybe traveling here to the States or any place else that you're inclined to go to?
I absolutely love traveling. I think it's the best thing that anyone can ever do with their money. I love meeting people from different cultures. I spend a lot of time in Asia, which is because it's simple to get there from Australia. It's a lot cheaper than traveling around the world. I've been to the United States 3 or 4 times so far. 2 years in a row for Comic-Con, I went over because Comic-Con is the best place in the world. I've traveled around. It's wonderful. I would have been traveling the last few years, but once again, COVID has come in and kicked everyone in the dick. So, sorry. But
okay.
It's so no traveling. It's been good for my writing, and that's about the only thing. But as soon as those borders open and as soon as it's safe to do so, I will be going overseas again. I have no idea where, but it's exciting to go on adventures.
Right. And if you ever get to the United States, look me up. I'll make arrangements to meet up with you, if just for a little bit.
For sure. Absolutely. 100%.
How do you deal with reviews, the good ones and the not-so-good ones?
Reviews used to really mean a lot to me. As the years have gone by, it's lovely to get good reviews. No one's ever going to say that it's not. But they become less important as the years go by, especially the bad reviews. Once again, you're not going to please everyone. And unfortunately, you know, the most miserable people in the world tend to have the loudest voices. And that's in all aspects of life, not just in books. So, you know, if you're getting bad reviews as a writer, don't panic. It's all that means is that person was not supposed to read your book, and they won't read any more books of yours, and they won't give you bad reviews on any other books. So if you whittle that down and you end up with your readers that do love your books, because they will, you know, write good books, people will read them. Even if it's about weird stuff, there's other weird people out there in the world. So you find those people, and it may take time. And as that time goes by, you work on your skills and refine how you write, and you'll find more people. And reviews, sure. I won't even go on Goodreads anymore because that's not for writers. I used to worry about reviews on Goodreads and stuff like that, and then you just go, well, that's for readers, you know. Readers can voice their opinions on that. That's fine. I cannot do a single thing about it. Same as Amazon. Amazon seems to be a little bit less, little bit more forgiving in regards to reviews, I think, than Goodreads. But, you know, if you go on there and get upset, you're not going to achieve anything. It's really easy to get disheartened as a writer because you're living in a bubble most of the time. There's no direct interaction with readers for a lot. I mean, occasionally on social media, you'll get someone says something lovely to you, but the rest of the time they stay silent, and then the mean people jump in there and they'll shout in your face. I think I have answered that in some way, shape, or form. Reviews are fantastic, but don't panic about them.
Right. Your thoughts on whether new authors should self-publish or go the traditional route? I know that you've been living in the world of self-publishing. Are you happy where you're at? Is there ever a time when you would advise someone to go the traditional route, or are you kind of sold on the self-publishing part of it?
I'm not sold on it at all. If I was, I wouldn't have agents. However, it's not an either-or scenario. It's not, you know, oh, my God, you either have to go traditional or you have to go independent. It's, you can go both. Dean Koontz is self-published. And, you know, that guy's at the top of the food chain. So if he's self-publishing, what's wrong with it for everyone else?
Right.
Personally, I am currently trying to get books traditionally published for various reasons. One is to be taken more seriously as an author. Unfortunately, there's still that stigma of the indie publishing, okay, you're not good enough. And I'm not saying I care about that opinion, but by going this route, it is making me a better writer. I am forced to lift the level of my writing, and my beta readers have all said this, in that my writing has gotten better because I'm forced to jump through more hoops to get publishers' attention. Hang on, my dog is yelling at me. Don't constrict yourself into thinking it's one or the other. Do what's right for you. If you're happy being an independent publisher, and I know a lot of great authors who are, because they've got more control over everything, they retain more rights, they can do whatever they want, that's great. And that side of independent publishing is fantastic. If you want someone else to take the load off your shoulders, then traditional publishing is fantastic. and, you know, they will give you more exposure in some aspects, unless you've got a huge marketing budget. So, yeah, there's benefits to both. But, yeah, don't say, I want to do one or the other. Do what's right for you.
Right. Yeah, you shouldn't be constrained in that aspect. So, Luke, we are getting near the end of the program here, and this is kind of the time for you to shine like you were at the Academy Awards, I like to say. Is any parting words that you would like to share, or would you like to thank anyone out there for your success down through the years?
I want to thank everyone. Every single person that's read one of my books, whether they've, you know, reviewed them or commented to me on social media or anything like that, the readers are the most important aspect of this job. As a writer, you're trying to entertain people, trying to give them a break from what is quite often just a horrible world. And especially my books with the fantasy elements in them, you just want to escape from the real world. You don't want to be stuck in what we're dealing with every day, and books are fantastic. So any reader who picks up one of my books and gives it a go, I love you. And guys like yourself, Tom, trying to get the word out there for smaller authors, you're fantastic. You're giving up your time to do this. So thank you for that. And yeah, thank you for having me on today.
Great. Luke, it's been a pleasure, and gosh, you know, 10 years goes by so quickly, and I'd like to have you back on at some point. Maybe we can have you on to give a little bit more advice, and I will be keep watching those toilet frogs of yours, and hope you don't flush them down, and I really appreciated you being on the Writer's Lounge with us again today.
Thank you, Tom. I'll talk to you soon.
Yep. Take care now, Luke. And there goes Luke Romaine. And I hope you will get out there and look up his books. There's plenty of them to read if you like. And that ends that chapter. And now to the final chapter of Final Thoughts and Intro. The next show would be on Monday, February 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to have on Frederick Reynolds. He wrote Black, White, and Gray All Over. We'll learn about what it's like to be a cop, and I'm sure we'll discuss some of the current events of today's, as of today, as it applies to law enforcement. And until then, see you next time in the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well. Good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make